The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Pro-America Report. This is Ryan Height filling in this week for Mr. Ed Martin, who is out on assignment doing a lot of incredibly important and exciting things. And I look forward to him being back to share those with you. I say look forward to him being back. Like, I'm not excited to be here with you. I am. I'm thrilled. And I hope that you're thrilled, too. I mean, this is only day three of the week. So maybe we should give you all another day or so before we vote on my permanent staying here. I'm kidding. Ed, if you're listening, I'm only joking. Okay, I'm only kidding. We're not going to have a vote. We're not going to vote you off the island. This is the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin. Oh, boy. And, of course, you can go to ProAmericaReport.com. That's Ed's Substack. And then, of course, go to PhyllisSchlafly.com. Not only can you see the day job that Ed and I have, Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, and a lot of really neat conservative things happening there, but also you will be able to do a few important things. That's where you'll find the archives for this program, the Pro-America Report. You can go there and you will get the podcast, all the past segments of guests, their links and resources, and of course the all-important Wink email, the What You Need to Know email. Every weekday morning you will get that. Go and sign up there. That is the second and also very important thing that you will get there at PhyllisSchlafly.com. Don't miss out. PhyllisSchlafly.com, ProAmericaReport.com. But we'll dive into it today. We've got a great show. Charles Haywood is on. Victor Avila is on. We've got two really good guests I'm looking forward to hearing from. I hope that you are as well. And this is a good one, but I tell you what, for our What You Need to Know, it's not so encouraging. And I hate to say that. We've had a couple of good discussions this week. We've been talking about anticipating the deep state, been talking about paying attention to down ballot races. And I wanted to kind of circle back to that. Just a couple of days ago, I kind of set down the reminder as we are looking across the field. We see the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, our good friend to conservatives, Congressman Bob Good in Virginia. He is apparently going to face a pretty stiff primary electoral challenge, and that's being put forward by the establishment Republicans. Well, they call Bob Good a troublemaker. The establishment wing, the rhinos, we'll call them the rhinos. I think that's still a very effective term, Republicans in name only. They think that he is a troublemaker, that he wears the jersey of Republicanism, but he doesn't come here to play the game and fight the good fight. No, he's definitely there to fight the good fight, but no, he's not there to play the game. He is fighting the game, fighting the system, this self-replicating, perpetuating system that has no interest in fighting for we the people, but has every interest in self-enrichment, accumulation of power and influence to the individual who runs it. It's really a terrible thing, this behemoth, the Leviathan, this machine of American politics, especially the unelected bureaucratic branch of government over our executive branch, as we used to call it. It really is a very terrible thing to see, but as we look at that issue, and again, Monday, what I had to remind everyone on, and I think is important for us to remember, we talk a lot about Donald Trump. We're talking a lot about Joe Biden. We're talking a lot about these top of ticket races. But to the very point of can't let go of the other ones, Bob Good, that is a wonderful voice in the U.S. House of Representatives. We must all, he may not be our congressman, but we must all make sure we help him and others like him, because we need those voices. We cannot forsake those down ballot races. Well, today I am mindful of going down the ballot even further and getting down to the nitty-gritty, to the local level. We just had municipal elections, not only here in the St. Louis, Missouri area, but across the nation, in San Diego, in Virginia, in all the states, coast to coast. Many, many, many municipal and local elections took place. Lots of mayors being elected, lots of aldermen being picked, lots of propositions and ballot initiatives and taxes and levies and bonds and different things that were being considered by the voters. But what's very sad is that some of the most important people that you and I can elect, our school board members, those folks were on the ballot yesterday. Those folks were here for us all to choose and pick who is going to go and shape school policy in our area. Well, public school, government school policy, let's be clear. And it was just like a normal election as far as turnout goes, and it's pretty sad. It's very small, very abysmal. In fact, let me get to it here. I want to look this up because I saw an update yesterday as we were going through. My home county, St. Charles County, Missouri, big suburb of St. Louis, for those of you who aren't familiar. It's pretty populous. We have tens, hundreds of thousands of people. It's big. It's very big. And it was very sad to me to see the update from our election authority, our director of elections in St. Charles. By about halfway through the day, we had 5.6% voter turnout. 5.6% of registered voters had bothered to come out to do municipal elections yesterday. Now I hope I need to go back and double check that number and see. I hope that drastically changed. That people came out after work and there was a bigger umph. But this isn't any surprise to any of us, is it? It really isn't at all, because we are used to seeing just abysmally low turnouts. And we have talked about this on the program before, just about, you know, how horribly low it is among particularly conservatives and people who identify as Christians and the Catholic voters and different things. There's just, you know, the evangelical Protestant Christians and Catholics. You can get down into each of these demographics and kind of start to nail down how many supposed folks there are who fit into these demographics that are elected or that are registered voters. And the numbers are just very terrifying and sad to see a quarter or less than a quarter, you know, 15% of the registered voters in some of these very important blocks, who I would think would go out and make good decisions, aren't showing up. So who does? Who does show up? Well, people that you and I don't agree with. And at least that's what we've seen quite a bit of. And that's what was, in my mind, pretty unfortunate about yesterday's elections around us. The whole St. Louis area had a pretty clean sweep of teachers' union backed candidates for school boards in most of the major school districts all around the area, the St. Louis county and city and the suburbs. And not that I saw one single conservative, independent minded candidate got through. All of them lost. Now, it was somewhat close because, you know, often in school board elections, you see pick two of the names below. So there'll be a couple people running that are endorsed by the teachers unions. And then there's a couple people running who are going to be, you know, more conservative, and the outsiders who are going to go in and have some transparency and clean things up. So there has been a huge change, it felt like, in the temperature of that room, the room of paying attention to school board elections. 2021, you may remember, in Virginia, there was a boiling over in Loudoun County and other places, angry parents. And not just angry parents, they turned into angry parent voters who were unhappy about what was going on. And I think you and I, listener, know just how bad public schools, government schools have gotten. But a lot of people started waking up to this after the classroom came home to their home on their student's laptop screen. Thank you, COVID pandemic 2020. People got a real firsthand look at some of the stuff, the junk that is going on in the government system, and said, whoa, 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 no way. This is not okay. And this was coming from a lot of people who are not politically connected, not very plugged into these cultural issues. That is, you know, I think that was a good wake-up call. But I got to wonder, where has that fervor gone? Has it petered out in a lot of places, including my own home area here in the St. Louis, Missouri area? I hope not. San Diego, Virginia, places where you and I live, places where we have seen this boil over in the last couple of years. Is it gone? I worry so. This, I think that's what you need to know. And we got a little bit of a wind-up here before we got to the punchline, but that's what you need to know, is the government schools have a stranglehold. And it's not just on curriculum and what's taught in the schools. The government schools have a stranglehold on who comes in as the checking and balancing authority, who comes into the school boards to guide and direct. There is a system, a self-perpetuating system here. And it's even, I would argue, more dangerous than the folks that we see in Congress, in the Senate, even across the federal executive agencies. Make no mistake, those are dangerous people who are doing dangerous things to citizens of the United States of America. But these folks, these are the folks who are crafting the minds and massaging the ideas of our future generations. And I think that you and I know for years now, the better part of a century, this government schooling system has not been conducted in some sort of honest, transparent, and pro-America, pro-patriotism, pro-Judeo-Christian values way. In fact, it's been very much running the opposite. This has been the epicenter of humanist and Marxist ideology and principle in America. It has started in the schools. And I think we both know that. Government schools have a stranglehold on the system, and we have got to break that up. Is it too late? Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But we still must go and work. Even if you're pulling your kids out, which personally I think you ought to do, save your kids immediately, we still got to go and fight because there are so many families, so many kids dependent upon that system. We still have to go and fight. Don't let go of those down ballot races. They are so important, arguably more important than the big oxygen sucking ones like the President of the United States, which we hear about over and over on the news. That's what you need to know today. Government schools have a stranglehold. We must break it. That is what you need to know. Thank you for being with us, for joining us for the show today. We're going to take a quick break, come back to a couple of great guests. Don't miss out on it. ProAmericaReport.com, PhyllisSchlafly.com, and we will see you back here after the break on the Pro America Report.
Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Our next guest, he was referred to me, I forget whom at this point, but I've now read his website, theworthyhouse.com. He's there. His name is Charles Haywood. He's the maximum leader of the magazine. They call it a magazine's online presence, and the founder of a political philosophy called foundationalism. And so we got a lot to cover in one 10-minute segment, but we're going to do the best we can. So first of all, Charles, welcome to the program. How are you?
I am great, and I am glad to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Tell me about, first of all, the Worthy House. You go there. There's a lot of great writings, and I want to ask you about like 10 of them, 10 of your posts, including one from a few weeks ago on the Camp of the Saints, which is an extraordinary work. But I don't want to do that yet because I want to ask you, how do you describe, on the website, it says the Worthy House, towards a politics of future past? Okay, so what is, and then you describe it in the about, but I'm going to say to you, explain that to me and the listeners. What are you talking about here?
Yeah, it's very simple. We can all agree that our current politics are terrible and need to be changed, but the response to that should not be to go back to some past nostalgic era where everything was great and we need to turn back the clock. Rather, we need a new politics informed by the wisdom of the past.
And how optimistic are you? I read some of your stuff. You're not a pessimist.
No, I'm a long-term optimist, very much so. I think that unlike, say, Europe, which yep. I think I frequently say Europe is over, even though I'm half Hungarian and I have close European connections of various types. I think Europe is over, but I'm very optimistic about the long-term future of America. I mean, I think there'll be a lot of kind of troubles along the way to get to a decent American future and reset things. But I think the American people have a lot to offer Western civilization and the world at large in the next couple hundred years. We just need to get our act together.
And so we'll get to that a little bit. I want to go back. Your background, you like a lot of people, including me, are a lawyer and worked in law practice for a while, which is great training. And then I clerked on the Eighth Circuit. You're on the Seventh Circuit. So this is high training for lawyers. And it means you can write and read and think critically. But may I ask you, I argue that one of the the crown jewel of America is our rule of law, Constitution, rule of law and all. And the lawfare thing is really, it's gone rapidly in the maybe 2-3 years, gone just beyond anything I could have ever imagined. Do you feel that as someone who's come out of that background?
No, I think that's absolutely true. And people don't understand, of course, that the rule of law is a precious and purely Western thing that has existed, who normally is an exception to despotism and various forms of tyrannical rule. And we in America are very fortunate to have that for a long time. It's not really a result of the Constitution. The Constitution is basically a dead letter at this point. As you say, it's a result of kind of hundreds of years of development of European and particularly English common law and the customs that surround political activity and action as those are reflected in the justice system. And so rule of law is not completely gone in America, but it's certainly largely gone. And the only reason it's not completely gone is because some of the federal courts still have older judges who recognize the importance of the rule of law. But certainly we have less rule of law than, say, under any late communist country, except for maybe Romania. The rule of law in practice doesn't exist reliably in America at all when you're involved in any kind of political activity and they're therefore a target for the regime.
And my point there is that even though I appreciate your long-term optimism, the future, looking to the past, of a nation that puts aside that, it's in other words, it has been the great check on the bullies of our, yes, of our normal being, of our normal self. If you put that aside, there are only, there are many variations, but there are only really a few options of how you end up living together.
Yes, I think that's correct. And I think that the kind of powers that be are very opposed to the rule of law because it prevents them from ruling as they wish. I mean, you saw elements of this in a slightly different way this week with Justice Ketanji Jackson on the Supreme Court,
right,
complaining that the First Amendment restricted the government in its ability to censor citizens. I mean,
right.
It's the same kind of mental attitude and legal analysis. I mean, Ketanji Jackson, let's just say her legal analysis is not of the best, but it's the same kind of attitude that underlies their desire to eliminate the rule of law, the desire for complete power of the left.
So what's your encouragement? I'm not saying you have a prescription. What do you do when I agree completely? I honed in on it. Ketanji Jackson's question was disturbing if you love the First Amendment, but to me it was more an indication of how far we've come, because this is a Supreme Court justice. I admire her intelligence, her success in academia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what she asked basically was, you're misunderstanding. This is just about power, and forget about it. And we're going to let the regime be the one that asserts power. I don't know what do you encourage us to have post rule of law?
Yeah, well, I mean, once you're in a post rule of law situation, kind of all bets are off, and you're just waiting around to see what happens next. I think the important thing to focus on in the American context is the fragility of the current regime. So the goal is replacing the current regime, eliminating the power of the people who now rule us, and replacing it with a not necessarily completely virtuous set of people, because no set of people is ever going to be completely virtuous.
Right,
this is
right.
A basic political insight that everybody understood, but that we need to get rid of the losers who rule us, then break their power. And that seems impossible, but it always seems impossible until one day you wake up and it happens. I'm always banging on about this, but the classic modern example is the fall of communism in 1989 and 1990. I mean, right up until the very end, the smartest and best paid minds in America assured us that communism was completely stable. There was no problem with the stability of the regimes in Eastern Europe or the Soviet Union. And then one day everybody woke up and it was all gone. And I think that our regime is much more fragile in many ways than late communism was. It's powerful, as we see this in the political prisoners that they have, and we have a lot more political prisoners as well as propaganda than in any late communist system. But power does not mean that it's not fragile. I mean, the first major economic crisis, and a real economic crisis, most likely the regime will kind of fall apart at the cracks. And then it's a question of people being prepared to assume the mantle of that power and restore the rule of law and the other things that did make America great once upon a time.
Again, Charles Haywood is our guest. He is the leader of the website, theworthyhouse.com. A lot of great writings there. I could spend a lot of time on that, but I do want to ask you to help me understand and help our listeners understand foundationalism. And we're kind of talking about some of it in application, how you think about things. But tell us about it and tell me how it can be helpful, not just from the standpoint of you and I talking about it and debating it, but if people understood it as a way to function.
Well, foundationalism is what I like to call an applied political philosophy as opposed to an ideology. So the 20th century, the major lesson of the 20th century is that ideology is a curse upon the world. Ideology meaning a set of ideas that are abstracted from human experience and if applied, supposedly will lead us all to some kind of utopia. You know, communism, Nazism, all those things are ideologies. And so my theory is that we need a political philosophy based in reality that can be used to inform the restructuring of a society once the power of the regime is broken. That is not something that says if you follow these 10 rules, you're going to have perfection, but rather if you follow these, in this case, 12 rules, as it happens, you will have a society that is likely to result in a maximum of human flourishing without guaranteeing anything in particular to anybody and without guaranteeing happiness to everybody, or the pursuit of happiness, right, is what we're entitled to, not right. Happiness. And ideologies promise us happiness rather than the ability to pursue happiness. So the idea behind foundationalism is that certain principles should be applied by whoever's in charge of whatever governmental system we have at any given time, because we've gotten away from that in favor of the leftist ideology that now rules us.
Charles Haywood, we talked to you, a long-term optimist. Do you think that sort of, and I'm looking at your, again, the website, theworthyhouse.com, final sentence of one of the pages that's describing foundationalism. And in truth, foundationalism is two things: the renewal of society, and then in brackets, I think you say, or the rebuilding anew of a crumbled society, combined with long-term maintenance of that society. You mentioned it two or three times in this conversation, the regime crumbling. How likely is that? I know you said that communism fell and nobody predicted it, but you are predicting you see the cracks or you see the stress lines. How likely is it in 10 years that we see a major collapse of things? Or are we seeing it in slow motion?
Look, predictions are cheap, right? As Yogi Berra said.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't like to use the term collapse because collapse implies like zombie movies and so on. I prefer to use the term fracture. And so my personal opinion is that we're 80% likely to see a fracture of the system probably much sooner than 10 years. And by fracture, I mean a complete reordering of political power and the political system. Maybe a return to something that's closer to the original constitution, maybe something new, but something that maybe something that uses the old names with a new system. I mean, that's very common throughout history, but a major set of changes that completely upends the American political system. Hmm.
Very good. Charles Haywood, I'm out of time, unfortunately, so I got to run to a break. I enjoyed it immensely. We'll have you back. In fact, I now remember the guy who said you got to talk to Charles Haywood said you're going to want to talk to him for two 10-minute segments. I should have planned for that. Next time I will. Thank you very much. And again, we'll put up on social media links, especially to theworthyhouse.com, where a lot of his writings are fascinating. We'll take a break and be right back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. As you all know, one of my favorite things is when people give me a good book to read and I get to talk to the author about it. In this case, one of our friends, one of our people who helps promote good people, Jenny sent us from her PR company, sent us Victor Avila and his film, Border Invasion and American Crisis. Very powerful. I have to tell you, Victor, when I turned, I watched the I always watch the trailer first, right? So I was like, okay. And I watched the trailer. It's only out a few weeks ago. And then I was like, holy cow. And I watched the whole film because I thought this is powerful. So welcome. First of all, Victor Avila is also himself served as a customs supervisory service special agent in ICE. Was in part in way back, I guess, 15, 14 years ago, ambushed by a cartel hitman and has been an advocate for our border security for a long time. Welcome, sir. How are you?
Thank you, Ed, for having me. Doing good. Thank you.
May I ask you first about your experience? Because when you're reading your bio, you survived this ambush. Just could you tell us, I think it's important to say it out loud. This is not like a debate between the West Side Story. When you're a jet, you're a jet. All of it's two little gangs. The cartels are much worse even than American organized crime in the movies, for sure. These are absolute vicious terrorists, the wrong word, but organized violence. Describe that a little bit so our listeners are more aware of it.
Absolutely. Great question. The cartels are not gangs. They're no longer drug trafficking organizations either, that we used to refer to them as DTOs. These people, by the way, they are terrorists. I do believe they're terrorists. Okay. I think they should be designated as foreign terrorist organizations. But I want people to understand that these are highly sophisticated networks of intelligence, of violence, of distribution. And I go around the country as a speaker, and I tell people to imagine the cartels as Amazon. What do you think about when you think about Amazon? Distribution centers all over the world, billions of dollars. Well, that's the same thing with the cartel, except they're having to deal in extortion, kidnapping, murder, human trafficking, drug trafficking, and many, many other things that they've deviled in. But they're not only headquartered in Mexico, they're present, 100% present in the U.S. and almost 50 countries abroad. And so that's how you have to deal with them. You cannot deal with them as a gang or a prison gang or a street gang, because that's not what they are. They have tentacles in many, many places, especially our country, which makes it a big public safety threat and imminent threat, I think, when we talk about border security.
Victor Avila is our guest. And again, one of the things we're highlighting, there's a lot to talk about. He himself, as he mentioned, speaks across the country on the topics related to the border. Also, he's been a supporter of President Trump and talked about veterans and the support of President Trump. But more specifically here, we're talking about this film, and it's called Border Invasion: An American Crisis. Victor Avila, again, is our guest. I got through at one point in the film, it references this, which I just think, again, is so important to break the spell. It's not a mother and father and two children with their and in front of my desk, I have Our Lady of Guadalupe, image. So I love it. And so I'm a Catholic and I'm a devotee to it. But that's not who's crossing the border. In Border Invasion, this film, Victor Avila and others are speaking about it. These are many, many, mostly military age, whatever you want to call it, 20s to 18 to 40 year old men coming across the border. It actually looks like an invasion.
That's because that's exactly what it is. And you're absolutely right. It's so you do see a family unit here and there.
Right.
The mainstream media, that's the only thing they'll show you, because when you go down there, that's the first thing you notice. Like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Look at all these young men, by the way, not from Mexico or Central America, but from Asia, Eastern Europe, Africa, India. And you're like, what the heck is going on? And that's where I think people don't realize the number of people and the number of different countries that they're coming from all around the globe. And then you have to start thinking about, well, why are they coming? This is what's changed and has shifted in the last several years. It's no longer that, well, I'm seeking the American dream and I want to be an American and I'm going to assimilate to the United States and adopt their constitution. No, there's still some of that. I'm not naive about it, but the majority has shifted to where they're bringing their ideology and their culture and their broken political systems, communism, socialism, into our country. And that's why you see a lot of conflict within local police departments. You see a lot of conflict because that's all they know. They've never seen anything else like that. They've never experienced a true constitutional republic. And it doesn't exist anywhere in the world. And so when you think, if you're being naive, if you think that these people are coming over and all of a sudden they're going to integrate themselves, like you said, in the church, and they're going to start talking to their neighbors, that's not what's happening. What's happening is too many of them are coming over and committing additional crimes. And it's not like we need that anymore. And I mean, we have a crime surge in this country. And the problem with this, and I'm a big advocate for victims of crimes in general, but especially those that have been victimized at the hands of a person that's here illegally. It's hard for me to tolerate that, because I think those are 100% preventable crimes.
Yeah. Victor Avila is our guest again. He is a former border ICE agent himself, supervisory agent at high level, and he is out speaking on this issue. The movie is about an hour and 5 or 10 minutes. I forget now exactly, and really worth checking out. Border Invasion and American Crisis. I'll put the link up. I'm sorry to tell you, Victor, and right now I'm not finding in my notes the website. So tell me in a second when I finish this question, the website people can go and find out more. But my sort of final opening here is, are people getting it? I know we're all busy. We're worried about inflation. Do you think at this point, as a matter of sort of understanding, that the majority of Americans are getting that there's a major, major problem?
Oh, man. And I'm going to answer it yes. And that's because of what I've seen now. Just a couple of years ago, even last year, I would tell you the answer would have been no. But right. I am seeing a lot more people, that nonchalant American, that we're all worried about our bills and soccer practice and everything that we have around our lives. But I have seen more people pay attention, especially, guess who? The Democrats. And right. The Biden administration knows this. Boy, do they know it. And they don't like the fact that they're losing grasp or control, if you will, of the Hispanic community, the Black Americans, and they know it, and they don't want them to wake up. It's my duty to wake everybody up, and all I ask is pay attention and be aware. Let's just start there. I'm a big believer in getting involved in your local community and local politics, and be involved locally, because that's where you make the most impact. Who's your city council member? Who's your county commissioner? All that good stuff. But I'm not even asking for that much right now. Just become a little bit aware. And once you become aware, you start realizing what in the world is happening. Because if something happens on your block, and God forbid something happens to you, whether it's something, a property crime, or something more serious, like a violent crime to you or a family member, it's too late at that point. And that's the point that I try to stress to many Americans. Don't wait until you're at the victim of whether it's just another a gang member locally here or an illegal. And you need to know that danger, and I'll say it that way, or that threat does exist. And once you realize that, you'd be surprised how you would change and become a little bit more alert.
Victor Avila, thank you. And you got to come back around and give me that website. By the way, this documentary is one of our Salem Now documentaries that Salem has worked to put out. Again, it's Border Invasion and American Crisis. And I'll put the link up to the trailer for sure. You should find this. Victor, what's the best website for people to get to?
So it was on salemnow.com, but I'm going to give you another website that you'll get it really easy. It's stanfitzgerald.com. Stanfitzgerald.com. You'll go there. He's Veterans for America First, or Veterans for Trump. And he asked me to put that website. You'll be able to get the link real easy through there.
Okay, great. Thank you, Victor Avila. Thank you for being out there. We appreciate all your work and your voice. And God help us. We need to keep understanding more and more and change the direction. So thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Ed.
Okay, Victor Avila, everybody. Again, former supervisory agent in ICE. When you see on the movie, he's talking, you know, again, it's not just a policy preference. He was down there working, living. It's powerful. So we'll take a break. I'll put all those links up and be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
How exactly did our universities become so left-wing? Well, it started in the 1930s, just after Hitler's rise to power in Germany. Many academics fled from Germany to the United States in search of safety. Of course, seeking safety from a dictator is a noble endeavor. These academics found the American commitment to free speech and liberty very appealing. The problem, however, was that some of these academics came from the now infamous Frankfurt School. The Frankfurt School was one of the origin points of the postmodernist philosophy that is wreaking havoc in American universities today. The importation of these refugee academics was sponsored by the Rockefeller Foundation. They were named the University in Exile. These professors were initially employed by the New School for Social Research in New York City. The Rockefeller Foundation consulted with the United States State Department, which was in full support of the project. However, the left-wing academics, who would today classify as cultural Marxist, were never meant to just stay at that one school. The Rockefeller Foundation archives explain that, in the case of a scholar received by the new school, it was not expected that he would remain there permanently. The new school aimed merely to be the springboard for his American adventure. Those cultural Marxist academics and professors were spread throughout our country's universities throughout the 1930s and 40s. They spread their ideas far and wide. Some on the left call this a conspiracy theory, but to this day, the New School for Social Research brags about the project. The New School states that its commitment to progressive values, academic freedom, rigorous scholarship, and critical theory in the tradition of the Frankfurt School lies at the heart of the New School's history and draws upon the vital legacy of the university in exile. They also brag about the transformation that they brought about throughout the United States. These leading intellectuals helped transform the social sciences and philosophy in this country. Knowing where they came from and what they're about is as important as what they're doing today. And removing this entrenched leftist influence will be difficult, but it is necessary.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. It's no secret that globalists are bent on destroying Western culture. Whether the threat comes from inside or outside our borders, America must be protected from cultural Marxism and those who would deny American sovereignty. We're seeking your insight at PhyllisSchlafly.com. That's PhyllisSchlafly.com. And join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Hyde here to close out the show for us. And a good show it was. We've got a couple things that I wanted to wrap up on, though, real quick. Before we do, let me remind you, ProAmericaReport.com, PhyllisSchlafly.com. You'll find all the items there. But I wanted to circle back around just real quick and talk about something. We have had a very interesting set of conversations this week around local elections, around down ballot issues. And today we talked about school board here at the beginning. I hope you were with us for the wink. If you weren't, go to PhyllisSchlafly.com, find the podcast, the standalone segment for that for that section of the program. You can listen to it. But we had a little bit of a sweep, especially in the Midwestern states, and I think a lot of places too, coast to coast, really. There was a big sweep and a powerful showing by what we would call system candidates. I would call them that. Folks who were backed by the teachers' unions, by the system. Our conservative candidates for school board, almost all across the country, just took a pretty devastating blow in the municipal elections that were held yesterday. And it really kind of serves, you know, like I said at the beginning of the program, it makes me worried because where is this fervor that we had in 2021? Folks showing up to speak their voice and getting arrested and dragged out of the school board meetings in Loudoun County, Virginia, and other places. Not that I'm looking for you to go to an event and get arrested. I'm not saying that's what you need to do to be cool and into the cool parents club of conservative people who show up at board meetings. But really, where is that fervor? That resulted in some incredible... That resulted in some really incredible election results in 2021, 2022 in Virginia, in Florida. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. The 1776 PAC was doing a lot of really cool stuff looking for conservative school board candidates to support coast to coast. And they had some huge victories in 2021, 22, and 23. But this year, yesterday, it felt like a huge damaging blow. It was almost like it was all gone. And it kind of leads me to stop and look and say, okay, maybe this is a time that we remember something here. I'm going to go ahead out on a limb. Let me preface this little wrap up here. I'm going to point you to two things that I think are very important, two resources. And I am specifically speaking to parents at the moment who have kids in school. Me being one of them, I'm speaking with a little bit of credibility here. I've got three young children right now and two of whom who are doing schoolwork. Doing school. You notice I don't say in school. I guess I kind of reveal right there that we're doing home education. But let me put this forward. There is a certain tipping point. I know there are a lot of wonderful organizations who work to switch over school boards, who work to get good conservatives elected, who work to get things done inside the school system. Tiffany Justice comes to mind, Moms for Liberty. There's some awesome people, and they are doing good work. It deserves to be supported. We should step alongside with them. But let me also say, doubling on to our wink for the day, the government school system has a stranglehold from top to bottom, from elections to graduation, from all, you know, whatever parameters you want to set on it. The government school system has a stranglehold on education in America, public education in America. There is a time when you walk in with the intent to reform, and there's a time where you say, nope, I got to save my family. It's time to get them out. And then we go back and keep fighting. But I'm fighting because there are still kids and still families who are there who don't maybe have options that we do. But there are an incredible wave of options in today's world for families who understand, man, that this system is going down. The building is on fire. What do I do about it? How do I get my kids out? There's a really neat set of resources and people I want to direct you to. And again, I know a lot of people say this isn't for everyone. This can't be, you know what? Pulling your kids out of this school system and finding something else, I think is not only going to save them, but is going to give them a better education anyway. And we could do a whole, I'm trying to wrap this into a couple of minutes here because we could do a whole segment on that. And I would actually, maybe this week we can do a little bit of that, talk about some of the educational options. But let me point you to two things. Alex Newman is a friend of the show. He's been on the program before, also in the Phyllis Schlafly Eagle world. We know him well, an investigative journalist and author who is awesome, unparalleled in the world of educational reporting. He has a brand new book that has just come out that you should go and check out, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, Government Schools' War on Faith, Family, and Freedom, and How to Stop It. Alex, it's an awesome resource. This is an awesome book. You should really take a look at it, especially if you have school-age kids. You should really, really take a look at it. But let me direct you to one other place. Alex is on the board. Actually, I think he's the executive director of an organization called Public School Exit. And they've got some free stuff online, especially guides for parents, for churches, talking about what is happening in the public school system, not just bad influences, but how the system itself is built upon a foundation, this Prussian model that has no desire to educate children to be thoughtful, individual, intelligent adults that grow into a good citizen in society, good people, good family men and women. It seeks to put them into being cogs in the wheel of society that government controls. Literally, that is exactly what this model system is designed to do. So it's not really just a matter of, oh, I want to pull my kids out of public school because it's bad influences. No, the system itself, the way it's designed, the curriculum, the standardized testing, all these different things, it's not taught to teach kids how to think for themselves. It's taught to teach kids the right answers to the right questions that we want them to give us. That's just the plain facts of it. So I want you to go take a look, publicschoolexit.com. There's some really interesting resources, and I think it's going to be very eye-opening and mind-opening as we continue to march through the world that we live in today. Also, go check out libertysentinel.org. There you can find Alex Newman's work and his book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. I think that it is a time not just to recognize the stranglehold that the government school system has, but what we can do about it for our families and do it immediately. Go take a look. There's a couple of great resources I want to point you to there. But that's it. That's all the time we've got for today. Thank you for being with us. Thank you to Mason, my co-producer, to Ed for being on vacation so we can just take over and talk about whatever we want this week. And thank you to you, most importantly, our wonderful listeners, for making this show what it is. Go to proamericareport.com, phyllisschlafly.com. Pick up the link, send them to a friend, and have some good discussions with them. Let it guide you and spark you into being a great, active American who loves their country and works for it. Thank you for being here with us, and we will see you back on another edition tomorrow of the Pro America Report.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.